keep it alive. Through these lines I write, I keep it live, cause I thrive. I might just blow your mind tonight. I'm so hyped, but it's no hype. From this height, it's direct hits on sight. I'm your type, lend me your ears to show you that there's something in me. I'm not giving up, I'm standing right here, holding these days hostage, and I'll make this my year. We turning fear into love, and the love's in the air. I love doing this cause nothing compares, nothing can share that same type of feeling when you feeling them flare. They can't catch it, it's havoc. I rip to a tear, switch the scenario. My stereos, I leave them impaired. Variables start to change, and they're all in my range. I just gotta grab it, it's all mathematics. Every step is drastic, I make it fantastic. I'm trying to take your breath away, asthmatic.
This is live through the stereo. Go and let it blow, blow through the stereo. I'ma let them know, no through the stereo. Yo, here we go, go through the stereo, stereo. This is live through the stereo. Go and let it blow, blow through the stereo. I'ma let them know, no through the stereo. Yo, here we go, go through the stereo, stereo.
Yeah, just nod your head with it. So explicit and vivid. Every image is intricate, intimate. I put my all into it. No scrimmage and no rules. I'm a pro tool. Hear my heartbeat beat into the vocals. I'm so loco, lost my mind. Oh no, it's ponderoso, dope so. No overdose, cause it's dope, yo. Man, this is house grown, mixed with some milestones. So I let the style flow down like the Dow Jones. Bringing it with some foul tones, letting the crowd. No, we getting loud, so it's eardrum rudiments. Yeah, we bring it rude again. Move, little hooligan. Music for tuning in. Full time to the 10. I'm on my clock, like I told you. I'm doing this for dreams. We pursue.
Hey, everybody, welcome back to the Anti Media Radio Show. Once again, with your host, Nick Burnaby, here on UCY.TV. Thank you all for tuning in, and we're really glad to be back with you. I'm joined in the studio tonight by Claire. Burnish, how are you doing tonight, Claire?
I'm doing very well, thank you. You got right that time.
Well, it's been a crazy roller coaster of times and all kinds of things like that going on all weekend because there's so much stuff going on. I mean, you name it. It's just hectic news day and news week. And I'm sure everyone's aware of the terror attacks that went down in Paris. And we're going to be talking all about that tonight with a special guest that we're going to be joined by in a few minutes by the name of Manar Muawesh. And so, you know, it's really complicated what's going on in France with these terror attacks. And I mean, I don't know how to, you know, put it into words myself, but hopefully between the panel tonight, we'll be able to break it down for everybody. So tonight on the call, we're joined by our special co-host, Jake Anderson. What's up, Jake?
Not much, Nick. Good to be with you. Definitely need some anti-media therapy after the weekend.
Yeah, because, you know, the propaganda is going strong, dude.
That's,
you know? So we're going to have to be really vigilant, I guess you can say, when it comes to resisting the propaganda and all that stuff. You know, it's very, what we're seeing right now is, seems very reminiscent of the kind of fear-mongering and pro-war propaganda that we saw leading up to the Iraq war, you know, and leading up to the invasion of Afghanistan post 9/11 and things like that. Of course, this stuff all happened in France, but we're seeing a lot of the same ideas in principle being, you know, laid out here by the media and by these politicians. So we're hoping to dig into that a little bit. We're also joined on the call tonight by Manny Aguilar. What's up, Manny?
A lot of things happening and stuff like that. Obviously, how can you not know about Paris? Everybody else is covering. So I'm hoping to get a chance tonight to you know, give you my rundown of the real stories that nobody's covering. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, definitely. In fact, I think we want to let's go into that first here because Claire has some input on this as well. So first, Manny, we're going to go to you, and we want to talk to you about some of this other stuff going on because we're going to have another guest later on to talk about more about Paris and that kind of thing. So Manny, the mic's in your hands at the moment, and then we're going to come to Claire after you're done.
Okay, I appreciate that, Nick. Obviously, you know, you don't see Manny changing his profile for any country. I'm a world citizen, as you know that. There's no borders for me and stuff like that. Now, obviously,
I'm with you on that, man.
Okay, As you know, I've had a really long week down there in San Diego. You've had a lot of news down there. We started at the immigration officer, office for the justice of Anastasio Hernandez Rojas, killed by Border Patrol after 5 years. Department of Justice says that there's no evidence. Of course, there's no evidence. They threw it in the trash, you know, so that's one. Tuesday, there was a fight for the 15th, fight for the 15th at City Hall down in San Diego. A lot of news down your way. I was there for that. You know, we need to start paying people $15 an hour minimum, you know. And so that's very necessary, you know. It's just, I'm always fired up with my chants, as you well know, you know. And I'm always, you know, basically saying it like it is, you know. I'm a union guy, but I also see the defects of the union, where the unions are not what they used to be and stuff like that, you know. But that's a different that's a different story, you know. Wednesday, I was down there on the Tijuana border in a section right there by the cars, right in the middle of where all the cars go by, all these lanes and stuff like that, for an organization that you well know and heard of, and not only heard of, but seen with your own eyes because you were down there with me one time. And that's the deported, you know, this is basically the justice for the deported veterans on Veterans Day, which happens to be November 11th. And so we had the deported veterans out there, the Tijuana chapter, Veterans for Peace, and also the Dreamer Moms and stuff like that. And so that was a really good thing and stuff like that. On Thursday, you know, I was at UCSD on the Million Student March at UCSD. Basically, the students are asking for free education, cancellation of all student debt, and $15 an hour minimum for all workers that work at the university and stuff like that. You know, so that's been a very long week for me, and so but it's been a very satisfying week and stuff like that. Now, to basically what has happened in Guerrero this week, the narco gobierno basically went down there with the police force and took the weapons away from a lot of these people that were basically, patrolling their own neighborhoods. As soon as they took the weapons away, the cartel comes and completely, basically slaughters all these people and stuff like that. I sent some pictures out. I'm sure you've seen them already and stuff like that. And you can't pretend stuff like that is not going on. You know, I have people that I know that pretend that everything's hunky-dory. I'm sorry, but it's not hunky-dory, you know, stuff like that. And I'm not trying to be negative against France or anything, but the bottom line is the bottom line. You know, when you still have, all these countries in Africa still having to pay their debt to France, don't even get me started with that, you know, and stuff like that. And so I want to respect the people, what happened in Kenya, in Lebanon, and other countries, you know, nobody's crying about that, you know, and stuff like that. So I'm just really, you know, I also have a big report that we did today down here on location. And as you know, everything I'm reporting, I have been personally on the trenches there. You know, this is not secondhand stories. This is, I'm right there on top of it, you know. And we have, we were honored to have, you know, basically the spokesperson, you know, for the Alianza de los Jordaneros, and she was here at the city, at the Mexican Council, you know, right up the street. You know, we were basically talking about what's going on down there. It's been a year, almost a year since the Jordaneros have been, you know, from San Quintín, and she was very proud to tell the crowd that she is so happy that she's getting support from both sides of the border, and that we're still here, standing strong and stuff like that. But we also thank a lot of people to make it happen. We also mentioned the 43, because it's one thing that happened again, and the 43 other Normalitos were killed again. And the war on terror, you know, is our own government down there, our own narco gobierno, as we like to call it, and stuff like that. So also, I want to basically say, you know, my love to the fight in San Quintín and stuff like that. And last but not least, tomorrow, Tuesday, will be the 32nd anniversary of the Zapatista Army of National Liberation. And for all those who are Spanish impaired, you know, it's basically el Ejército Zapatista Nacional Liberación. It's all like that. And so that is a big report from the Mocha brother, Manny Aguilar. I also want to say that on Monday, I was very, very happy. I got to meet Vanilla Sister, you know, at the Anti-Studio, you know, headquarters and stuff like that. Being up with Nick and Vanilla Sister that I finally met, put a face to her, was really an honor. I appreciate it. Also, on Thursday, on Wednesday, was also a good day after I came back from Tijuana, and it was really nice to have finally put a face and have met my brother, D.B. Shorts, and that was a really honor. I appreciate that, too, and have been in studio with Vanilla Sister Claire and D.B. Shorts at the same time was a really, really great moment for me, to say the least, and stuff like that. So I appreciate all the work that you guys are doing. Kind of disagreeing away sometimes with this France, but I know what you're trying to do. You're not trying to say it's the only place that's happening. Also, want to send a little hello to Vanilla Brothers there. Jake, how you doing, Jake? Hope everything's okay, brother. And so, you know, with that and stuff like that, I just want to say that, you know, I really appreciate your efforts that you guys are doing. Thank you.
Manny, thanks, man. Much appreciate the shout-outs, and we appreciate your work as always. It was nice having you here in the studio on Monday, and it was, you know, nice to finally jump you into the anti-media gang. just kidding. Anyway, you know, you make a great point there. You know, this whole fight for 15, the minimum wage, is a very contentious, polarizing issue, and, you know, I have a kind of a unique perspective on it, and I think people have a very, very different views on it, man. But, you know, in this economic system that we're in, that it's based on an inflationary, you know, scheme, the Federal Reserve, the fiat currency system, I mean, it's almost impossible to not have a minimum wage, because we have this inflated currency that's constantly being devalued. Our costs are constantly going up. I mean, shit, look at the cost of education. It's gone up like exponentially in the past 10 years. I mean, it's ridiculous. Cost of housing, I mean, yeah, after the bubble crash in 2008, it's gone down, but now it's like skyrocketing back up. All the commodities, the gas prices, I mean, the food, everything is really expensive. It's a lot higher than it should be, you know, and when we're in this kind of system, you know, it kind of warrants a minimum wage, in my opinion. And so that's one of those things that, you know, is very, very contentious, but it's a valid debate to be having. I think that we should be talking a lot more about monetary policy, but that's one of those issues that nobody wants to talk about. The politicians won't talk about it. The media won't talk about it, you know, and the monetary policy topic is not being touched in the debates. I mean, Ted Cruz briefly touched on it in the last Republican debate, but Ted Cruz is a complete idiot on everything else, so no one listens to him anyway, so it doesn't really matter. Back to the points you were touching on, Manny, as far as, you know, all these things that are going on in all over the world, not just in France. First, we're going to go to Claire, and then we're going to be joined by a special guest from Mint Press News after that. But first, I want to go to Claire, because Claire had this awesome article that went up over the weekend called America, Your Solidarity with Paris is Embarrassingly Misguided. And from my calculations, this single article, it was syndicated across multiple websites, including on The Mind Unleashed, where it went extremely, extremely viral. It was literally the single most viral piece of text on the internet in the entire world over the weekend. And Claire wrote it, and it's an opinion piece, but it has a bunch of valid points in it. And what it talks about is yes, like, we should all be mourning what's going on in France, and it's a horrible tragedy. But it also brings up this really valid question of, why in the hell do we all of a sudden care about what's going on in France when there are literally thousands of people dying every single day in all these other conflicts around the world, many of which our own government is at least partially responsible for, you know? And so, Claire, we're going to go to you briefly to talk about your article, and then we're going to go over to Manar Muawesh from Impress News.
Okay, so my immediate thought as soon as the attacks in Paris happened was, I bet Facebook is going to have a filter that is going to allow people to have the French flag. I mean, I literally immediately thought that, and sure enough, that started to happen right away. And my feeling was, there had been a similar attack in Beirut hours before this happened. And it was hardly talked about on the news at all. And it's not as if, you know, you see like Lebanese flags all over everybody's profile pictures. You do so now. Wait,
What color is the Lebanese flag? See, that's something I don't even know.
Yeah, it has red bars at the top and bottom, and it has an evergreen tree on it. It's actually a very nice flag. But the point is, there is no nationalism to victims of terror. There is no real country. Nobody can claim any. We're all victims of our government's, you know, imperialistic, just hegemonic mode, and we are all humans together, first and foremost. So emphasizing what happened in Paris above what has happened in, you know, countless other places, Beirut and Syria and Palestine, and the list is endless. I mean, Yemen. One of the big criticisms in this piece was that I didn't name such and such country. And, you know, honestly, it would be like 80 pages long if I had to name all the places where we were involved, that we were causing the problem, and that we were not standing in solidarity.
Remember last week when we were sitting here working, because, you know, Claire is now working with us here in location at the Anti-Media office, and there was a guy that was commenting on one of the articles, and he had a Doctors Without Borders emblem on his profile picture, and I was like, that's a guy I need to friend, you know, because he knows what's going on, you know. And just, it was only a couple weeks ago when the U.S. literally bombed a hospital of a Nobel Peace Prize winning organization in Afghanistan, and literally it was like, yeah, it made news, and there was a few stories about it, and it was on TV for a little bit, but it was nothing near the amount of media attention as France is getting, as Paris is getting, you know?
Or even like Kenya, there was an attack where like 2,000 people were killed. I mean, this is happening all the time. Hundreds and thousands of people die every single day all around the world in attacks like this and similar attacks and attacks by our own government. And yet, where are the flags on filters? You know, why is it so important that we stand with this one kind of European country and we're not standing with everybody else in the world? It comes down to humanity, and I think we've lost sight of that.
And the perfect term to me is selective outrage, right?
I agree.
And that's what it is. It's like, oh, well, you know, 25 people died because we bombed a hospital in Afghanistan. The U.S.-backed intervention in Yemen has bombed over 100 healthcare facilities, and you know, no big deal. You know, nobody really gives a shit. The media don't talk about it, so therefore nobody really gives a shit.
If it's not an approved victim, if it's not somebody we are supposed to mourn and supposed to be standing in solidarity with, you can almost guarantee we won't hear much about it in the news.
Exactly. And so, you know, that being said, I want to bring Manar into this, because Manar is one of the people that, in my opinion, has one of the greatest wealths of knowledge as far as what's going on in the Middle East and all the geopolitical undercurrents that are going on. Because, you know, as we watch the media and you see what they're saying by Reuters and Politico and Fox News and all these mainstream outlets, it's like, hey, look, this happened, therefore let's go and, like, let's encourage our politicians to go bomb more people, you know. And the Democratic debate last night, or on Sunday, yeah, last night, they kind of really pushed that idea out there and allowed these candidates to put out their pre-written kind of talking points on ISIS and on terrorism and the war on terror. And it's all this very reactionary, oh yeah, let's just go and do more, let's go bomb more and stuff. But what the conversation is lacking right now in the mainstream is, why in the hell is all this stuff happening to begin with? You know, and I think Manar can help us out a little bit on this because she has a very in-depth knowledge of this. Manar, welcome to the Anti-Media Radio Show. How's it going tonight?
Good. Thank you so much for having me. I'm honored that you even said that about me, Nick. Thank you.
Yeah, well, we're glad that you're joining us again. We thought maybe we scared you off on the last show.
No, not at all. Glad to be here.
So, Manar, I guess the first thing I want to talk about here is, why do you think France was the target of this attack?
Well, I don't know. You know, I don't know if that's an easy answer to provide, but I know that, you know, France has been at the forefront of destabilizing a lot of countries across Africa and countries across the Middle East, including Syria. And so France needs to take responsibility, you know, Holland needs to take responsibility for what they have done to the sovereign nation of Syria, from calling on regime change even before there was any sort of Syrian revolt in the country, from arming the Free Syrian Army. In fact, Hollande was one of the first European leaders that initiated the Friends of Syria Pact, which was this coalition between France, the United States, Britain, and of course Turkey, Qatar, and Saudi Arabia that basically formed the Friends of Syria Pact, which included the initial Syrian rebels, the so-called moderate rebels that we keep hearing about. And these rebels, of course, have mostly defected to ISIS. They've gone on, they've destabilized the country through sectarianism. And so they've helped create this monster that is ISIS that we know of today. And so groups like ISIS, organizations like MIT Press have been reporting on ISIS before they even made the news. I mean, we reported on ISIS when they were just a small entity that was part of Al-Qaeda in Iraq. And we reported that their ultimate, game plan after destabilizing Iraq and Syria, of course, and establishing their so-called Islamic caliphate that just so happened to be, of course, across all of the oil-rich regions that just so happened to be of interest of the United States. Now we know that, of course, Western nations are buying a lot of their oil on the black market from ISIS. We knew that from the very beginning that ISIS's plans have always been to continue to destabilize, because really divide and conquer is what keeps Western nations, NATO countries and NATO members, to continue their wars. As long as these nations are destabilized, countries like France or the United States or Britain, they can continue to control the resources in the region. And that's really what it comes down to. I know that was a long answer, but that's really what it comes down to.
Well, that's, a great answer. And that's exactly what we were looking for, because this is the exact conversation that is lacking in the mainstream. You know, it's, there's bad people, so let's go bomb them. And that's exactly what France has been doing. You know, Francois, right. Hollande, I'm not very good with French, but...
I have trouble pronouncing his name.
Yeah, and I always confuse him with Nicolas Sarkozy and stuff. But they've already authorized over 100 airstrikes in Syria now, and that mm-hmm. literally only happened on Sunday. And they bombed 100 different places in Syria. Various reports came out claiming that some reports claim that there were absolutely zero civilian casualties, which we know is probably not true, because ISIS capital Raqqa, where most of the bombing took place, is mm-hmm. is very much populated by a civilian population. And then I saw alternate reports that were saying that there were hospitals that were hit and several other civilian locations. And so this is the answer that the West is serving up here in this attack. You know, the reactionary answer to this is, hey, let's just drop more bombs. Even though, you know, when you look a little deeper, as you were just explaining to our listeners, a lot of this stuff is a lot of the reason why ISIS is even doing what it's doing or able to exist in the first place. It comes from Western policies and NATO intervention and foreign meddling and that kind of thing. And it always brings up this whole question of the Iraq invasion in 2003. And that's the next thing I want to kind of talk about here, because I think now it's pretty much become a mainstream fact that if we hadn't overthrown the government of Saddam Hussein, which I'm not going to make any excuses for Saddam. I think he was a horrible dictator. I think he did horrible things to the Kurds. He initiated a war against Iran, albeit with U.S. backing at the time. He was not a great guy by any means, very similar to Gaddafi in many ways. But at the same time, he was a secular nationalist dictator that kind of had the country more or less in a state of agreement in peace. You know, people weren't killing each other as much as they are right now. And the guaranteed thing was that, first of all, Al-Qaeda wasn't there in Iraq when Saddam was in power, and ISIS didn't even exist at the time, you know. And so mm-hmm. That brings me to the second thing I want to ask you is, what does the role in the role of the U.S. led overthrow of Saddam Hussein play in this, you know, creation of ISIS?
Well, this is all, what you just mentioned is really the key to the whole story, because what we're seeing now is just a continuation of the post 9/11 model. I've been watching, Abby Martin's new show, like The Empire Files, and it really kind of echoes what we've been reporting, what you've been reporting, and a lot of independent journalists have been reporting, in that the only reason the United States even attacked Iraq in the first place was just to have an entryway into regions in Iraq and Afghanistan, both in areas where that were untouched by corporations before. And despite Saddam Hussein being placed in power and armed by the United States, we still wanted to go and topple that regime just in order so that we can get access to the oil in that country and build those contracts with our corporations in the first place. And so this really all goes back to the post 9/11 model of creating more and war and instability for access for gas and oil, like the clamor for gas and oil, excuse me, so that we can create this endless cycle of violence, this endless cycle of warfare to continue to justify exploiting these resources. And, you know, we have a RAND report that came out, I believe it was a military report funded by the RAND Corporation that came out, I believe it was in 2008, that showed how the United States very well knew that it would be using, and it would plan up that it would be using terror groups like Al-Qaeda to control oil fields and gas fields, and the United States would use that so that the Saudis, who are arming and funding most of these terror groups like ISIS and Al-Qaeda and Al-Nusra, you know, Al-Mujahideen in Afghanistan, and, you know, the terror groups in Sudan and across Africa, those are all being armed and funded a lot by the Saudis and the Gulf Arab nations. And it's so that the Saudis can maintain hegemony over the oil markets, and that way the United States continue to get very cheap gas. And so when it comes to groups like ISIS, with the rise of ISIS, I don't think that it was a surprise. I think it was to be expected. I think it was a very well laid out plan, in fact, to ensure control over resources in the region. So it all really does go back to that first invasion of Iraq and creating that monster. And I think it's really naive of people to think, well, wait, we could have avoided these things. We definitely could have, but that's really naive of us to think that our politicians actually wanted to avoid those things. I don't think that they wanted to.
Exactly. And, you know, on Mint Press News, I saw a article that you guys had blogged from the Free Thought Project regarding a report that came out about how the U.S. kind of knew that ISIS was going to come about due to their actions. And we briefly covered it on the anti-media as well. It came from the DIA, which is the Defense Intelligence Agency, which is just another one of these bureaucracies that, you know, is out there that does a lot of intelligence and that kind of thing. But, you know, according to the U.S.'s own internal reports, they kind of knew that an Islamic caliphate was going to grow out of the intervention in Iraq, you know.
They wanted it to happen. The report actually said they wanted an Islamic state to form because they felt that would help to kind of further their agenda in the region. So they actually expected this to happen and somewhat desired it as well. It's pretty inflammatory, but things are playing out exactly as they predicted and exactly as they wanted, at least at the time.
Yeah, and it's really scary to think that, you know, the U.S. is willing to sacrifice the amount of lives that have now been lost here in Syria. Is the latest incarnation of U.S. foreign policy, where we have at least 300,000 dead. And according to some reports, there's at least over 11 million people now internally displaced in Syria. Of course, many of the people are fleeing the country, and that's turned into what we know now as the refugee crisis that is, engulfing Europe and all these other places, including the U.S., it really does go to show the heartlessness of the foreign policy that's being deployed right here.
One thing I have to say about the displacement too that's very important, that we kind of learned the lesson from Iraq, is that 1 in 5 people who are displaced actually lose their lives for that displacement, whether it's internally or they have to actually immigrate to another country. So that number of refugees that is being represented in the news is actually an enormous loss of life as well.
Well, yeah. What's so interesting about a lot of these conflicts too, and I just, you know, don't mean to interrupt you guys, but it's, you know, we create messes and act like we need to go in and save the people there, just like we're doing in Syria now, just like we did in Afghanistan or Iraq. Like, you know, we prop up these dictators, we destabilize, we we arm these jihadists, and then we're like, hey, look, the people are really suffering. We need to go help them out. And then all of a sudden we just go in and just bomb the shit out of them. And it's just, you know, it's really just a pitiless and just heartless foreign policy. It's at its worst.
And, you know, this, to people that really know their history, it shouldn't come as too much of a surprise. In 1953, the United States helped overthrow the government. And keep in mind, the democratically elected government of Iran, for the most part, because they had nationalized the oil supplies. And then in 1954, just a year later, we overthrew the government of Guatemala to literally secure a fruit supply, to literally say, no, we want our company getting the fruit from your country. We don't want it to be nationalized and given back to the peasant, you know, the peasant worker force and all that, because that's what was going on in Guatemala at the time. You know, so the U.S. has a long history, not only in the Middle East, but especially in Latin America. You know, the modern Monroe Doctrine, we talk about it all the time here on the Anti-Media Radio, plays a major role in this ideology that we think that, you know what, if you don't allow our corporations to go in and do what they want to do and take your resources, well, then we're going to go ahead and just overthrow your country. You know, and this is a really sad state of affairs, because, you know, the American people, unfortunately, are sold this lie that, you know, we're going in and we're going to save their country from a bad dictator and we're going to give them freedom and democracy. I mean, that's not really the case in Afghanistan. It's not really the case in Iraq. It's not the case in Libya. They don't have democracy. They don't have freedom. Their people are under siege constantly by various groups that are vying for power. And this is kind of what's just going on constantly. Now, Manar, you had another piece on Mint Press News. I believe you were the one that wrote it. And it was really one of the best articles I've ever read on the true underlying interests that are going on right now in Syria, because I don't want to downplay the role that Russia is playing in this whole thing, because Russia is playing a major role in propping up the Assad government. Meanwhile, the U.S. and NATO is playing a major role in propping up the opposite side of the spectrum, which is a lot of these Syrian rebel groups and ISIS before they went rogue and all that kind of thing. But you had an article about these oil pipelines that were being, these plans for an oil pipeline. And this gets really deep into the whole geopolitical operation, the chessboard, I guess, if you will. I wanted to see if you could elaborate on that once again for us. I know you talked about it briefly in depth in a previous radio show of ours, but I was wondering if you could talk about it again briefly for our listeners.
Absolutely. Well, I believe it was the year before or a couple months before the Syrian revolt even took place, but Russia was in talks with Iran and Iraq to build a gas pipeline that would run through Iran, because Iran is the only country in the Middle East that possesses two main resources, which is both gas and oil. Saudi Arabia has oil, Iraq has oil, but Iran has two major resources, are gas and oil. And so with Russia, having a kind of monopoly over the gas market in Europe, they obviously went to their allies in Iran to build a gas pipeline that would run through where? Of course, through Syria. That would go through Europe then to supply Europe with gas. And that would have given Iran a major boost to their economy, considering Iran has been under tight sanctions for over 30 years. And countries like Saudi Arabia and the Gulf Arab nations were just not happy with this. And, of course, Israel was not happy about this. The United States was not happy about this. You know, everybody had kind of their own interests in why they weren't happy about this.
And
Turkey was not happy about it either.
Syria here is kind of like the cornerstone of this whole thing, because the pipeline, the one little detail here is that the pipeline had to go through Syria in order to make it into Europe.
Yes, it would have to go through Syria, and of course, Turkey and Qatar both tried to convince the Assad government, and these meetings were, you know, this is like public information. When after they had, Assad had refused and said, no, we have a deal with Russia and with Iran to do the pipeline, basically that's when everything went to shit in Syria, is when Assad had said, no, to getting the Qatar, Saudi, and Turkish pipelines through. And that's when WikiLeaks also revealed for us that Israel, Saudi Arabia, Qatar, Turkey, and the United States all had called for regime change in Syria because all of those countries would have some sort of interest. From Israel, you know, profiting and taking advantage of the civil war, to exploiting the Golan Heights and expanding its occupation, to Turkey expanding its influence. I mean, you name it. I mean, everybody has an interest when it comes to this gas. And really, that's all it comes down to is the gas.
Yeah, and we can't downplay the role Israel plays in this too, because the Golan Heights is a very strategic place for Israel, not just for geopolitics, but also for resources. They've discovered a huge gas field under the Golan Heights. And
yeah, we have like big Chinese companies extracting gas as we speak. So it's just terrible.
Yeah, and Dick Cheney's on the board. I mean, it's like a star-studded list of demonic actors. I mean, literally, Rupert Murdoch is on the board of this gas company, and that includes Cheney and some crazy other actors. Was it
Rothschilds?
One of the Rothschilds on the board. I mean, you can't even make this shit up anymore. It's just insane. So the Golan Heights is an area that is, according to international law, belongs to Syria. Israel took it over several decades ago, and they don't want to give it back. And that's why one of the reasons why they have interest in keeping or destabilizing the Assad government is because they don't want to give that land back, because now they know how strategic it is. And so this whole thing is just, it's such a big picture, and there's so many undercurrents, geopolitical undercurrents that are going on that is fueling the Syrian war. And, you know, ISIS was initially at least a convenient kind of destabilizing factor in taking out the Assad government, and now it seems like they've kind of lost control of them, you know. And it's very much, very, very much like what happened with Osama bin Laden and Al-Qaeda. You know, we created these monsters in these regions where it's like, okay, look, we're going to make these guys so that we can beat the, you know, so that we can take down the Soviet Empire, you know, and that worked. But then after that happened, oh shit, now they're bombing our own places. They're terrorists are bombing our countries and that kind of thing. This is the same exact kind of thing that happened with ISIS. At first, it was a convenient factor. It's like, yeah, we can use these guys. Yeah, they may be horrible and they're super ideological, but we can use them to help overthrow a government to help our geopolitical chessboard. And then now what we're seeing right now is what happens when foreign policy goes bad. And that's exactly what ISIS is. I mean, they may have been initially created by the CIA, and I don't buy into any of this crap right now where it's like, oh, ISIS is just being controlled by the CIA currently. I don't buy that. But I think that initially, at the least, they were a product of U.S. policies overthrowing Saddam. They filled a vacuum, and we saw them as beneficial to help overthrow Assad, and now they've just gone rogue. And now we're trying to deal with the aftermath, and that's exactly what France is dealing with. And basically, they're reaping what they sowed. You know, France was a party in all of this, all of these plans, all of this NATO intervention, all of this overthrowing of these governments and all that stuff. And so, unfortunately, the French people, the public of France, is now being the victim of their own government's bad policies. And to make matters worse, I wrote an article on this today. It's just really, really sad to see what's going on now in the aftermath of this attack. First of all, more war. We already touched on this. They're already bombing. On Sunday, France already bombed in Syria like 100 times. And, you know, that's horrible. The second thing I want to mention here is that the people of France, the public, which were the victims of this terror attack, which is at least partially caused by their own government, now they're basically in a state of martial law, but almost. They're almost in a state of martial law. They've got 10,000 troops throughout France on the streets patrolling the place, you know, in theory, to keep the people safe. They've enacted a curfew for the first time since World War II. They did 150 raids across the country and all these different people. They placed 104 people on house arrest.
Closed the borders.
They shut the borders down. France was already dealing with the people of France were already dealing with a bunch of new surveillance after the Charlie Hebdo bombing and all that, the Charlie Hebdo attack and all that stuff. They were already dealing with new surveillance laws that are just coming into play right now. you know, and France has already banned certain forms of protests. And by all indications, it looks like France is about to go through what the United States went through post 9/11. What we're talking about is the French version of the Patriot Act and militarized police, stop and frisk, total surveillance of digital communications and that kind of thing. And so what we're seeing here is, you know, the government creating a problem and then they're creating a false solution by saying, hey, guys, look, we're going to keep you safe by spying on you, you know, and by having a huge police presence that's going to beat the hell out of you and shoot you people down in the streets just because you look different or because you talk back to us or whatever. You know, France is about to go through the same shit the United States went through post 9/11, and we're still dealing with that stuff right now. A report came out today I shared from Revolution News that showed that 3 people a day in the United States are being gunned down by cops and killed. You know, I mean, it's completely insane. Over 1,000 people in the United States have been killed by cops, and this is all post 9/11 ideology, you know, militarization. We gotta, you know, we're gonna just overdo it to protect you from yourself, you know, and that kind of thing. France is about to deal with that same exact thing. And now another point I made in my story today, and I saw that on you guys on Mint Press News story on the Facebook page about it today, is the rise in Islamophobia, xenophobia, and anti-immigrant sentiment that is going to be triggered by these attacks. And so I wanted to talk about that a little bit because, you know, the main issue here is that there's a bunch of innocent people that are going to be fall victim to anti-Islamic sentiment because of the acts of a few bad actors by the acts of ISIS. And we just talked about how they came about and all that stuff. But because of the acts of a few, the entire religion and an entire group of people are being condemned because of it, you know, and we see it being perpetuated throughout the right-wing media. InfoWars is probably one of the worst ones of the bunch that are kind of putting out this, oh, it's the Muslims that are the problem and this, that, and the other thing, you know. Manar, I know you've actually experienced some of this firsthand. You know, what can we do about this, you know, anti-immigrant sentiment, this Islamophobia stuff? Because I think to me this is one of the biggest problems, because, you know, the likelihood of us getting actually killed in a terrorist attack is very, very slim. In fact, you're like 58 times more likely to be killed by a cop than you are by a terrorist. But I think that the even bigger problem here is that people that are Muslim are going to come under attack by people that are just basically misled and misinformed and misguided. What can we do about it?
First of all, I think everybody needs to turn off their TVs, because that is just like the number one place to get all the scary news. you know, what you just mentioned, you know, I actually visited my parents and the first thing they said to me when I told them, they're like, Manar, did you condemn the Paris attacks? And my parents are obviously Muslim. And I said, yes, I condemn the Paris attacks, but it's not our responsibility to condemn something that we did not do. You know, we had nothing to do with this. And, you know, that's exactly what this fear-mongering wants us all to do. It wants us to, you know, put Muslims on the defense, dehumanize the people that we're bombing overseas, and kind of build this national, you know, this love for country, this patriotic love for country that you mentioned in your... I read your article today, and you mentioned that, and I really appreciate you pointing that out, because now everybody has the France flag up on, their walls and their profile pictures, and we're really kind of building this nationalistic sentiment for France, a country that has literally worked, as you just mentioned, to create this terror group ISIS. When in fact, what we should be doing is we need to turn off our TVs, like I just said, and think about the human aspect. I mean, these people, these refugees who are leaving their countries, they're leaving, running away from the horrors of ISIS. They're running away from terror groups. I mean, ISIS, we know that they've killed, you know, the casualties in France, but ISIS has killed over 100,000 Muslims in Iraq, in Syria. Actually, I would say ISIS and Al-Qaeda both have killed that many people just in the past 2 years. And so when people try to, you know, merge the two together, like Muslims and ISIS are one thing. In fact, Muslims are the biggest targets of terror groups. In fact, nearly 1,000 people have been dying each month in Iraq. Of course, we're so numb to hearing about Iraq, we don't even think about the people there. Nearly 1,000 people are dying nearly every month, not from their government, not from, you know, other, you know, countries bombing them, from groups like ISIS. And so that's what we have to remember.
It's just so sad to see, and people automatically condemn these immigrants that are running from the U.S. policies, and I made a brief mention of it in the article, and it's so hypocritical for these misled patriots to kind of blame the refugees that their own governments are creating. You know, I mean, this refugee crisis has been manufactured by NATO in many ways. I mean, and we can't lay the entire blame because Russia is also backing the government of Bashar al-Assad. And, you know, all it's doing now is just creating this big proxy war. And everything that – all the answers that France has put forward and their government has been doing since the attack is only going to lead to an increase in refugees, you know. And at the same time, the countries in Europe are now wanting to close off their borders. And so it's – to me, I made this comment the other day in a conversation I had. It's basically like – setting a building on fire, then locking the door shut, and then blaming the people inside for not having a fire extinguisher to put the fire out, you know. And this is exactly what people, you know, what these Western governments have done. And albeit, you know, these governments don't listen to the public, you know, and so the public may not have wanted to go into the Iraq war and stuff, but they were fooled into it. And, you know, the government was going to do it regardless of what the public opinion said. And so I, you know, we can't blame the public entirely, but, you know, the public has to understand that it's their own governments causing a lot of these, you know, bad conditions that are going on. Manar, exactly. I want to thank you again for, joining us. We're gonna shift over to another guest that we have coming in, but, once again, that's Manar Muawesh from Mint Press News. Make sure you follow her on Twitter, Facebook. Make sure you go follow the website, mintpressnews.com. Manar, peace out. We look forward to having you back on the show soon.
Thanks
so much for having me.
You know, I wanted to mention what you said about turning off the TVs, you know, so that you guys don't watch the Kardashians or Bernie or whatever candidate you're going for. You know, also all these, you know, sports, people are paying too much attention to the wrong things and all that. And that way the people can stop medicating themselves and stop listening to people like Donald Trump. It's what creates more hate than anything else, Nick, you know?
Turn off the TV and listen to the anti-media radio, you know what I mean? That's what I say.
Exactly, because, I mean, look at the governors, all funny. All the funny, this is a federal thing with the refugees. This is law. Now the state governments want to completely say no to the refugees, and, of course, you're going to the most racist state that is, you know, basically one of the states of Texas. Texas is number one for racism, and, of course, Arizona is number two, you know? And it's crazy. One of the refugees over there. That's crazy, you know?
Yeah, man. You got a bunch of these governors saying, hey, we're not going to take the refugees over here just now because it's politically convenient and stuff. But, you know, like we talked about, they're not going to talk about why this refugee crisis started. They're just going to talk about, oh, here's our reactionary talking points, and hopefully you vote for us next time. You know what I mean? We'll start more wars and create even more refugees and then continue to blame it on the countries that we're bombing. You know, and it's a really sad state of affairs. And I think we have a special guest on the line from the organization formerly known as America Today. I say formerly known as because they were recently banned from Facebook over some posts that were made criticizing what's going on around the world, I guess you could say. Those not familiar, America Today is a very awesome, sometimes satirical, but always biting media outlet based on Facebook that would post some very hard-hitting memes for the most part. And Ryan Butcher is joining us from the organization, and they were banned over the weekend because of some stuff they posted. Ryan, what can you tell us about what happened?
Hey, Nick. Hey, Claire. Good to speak with you guys. Thanks for having us on. We over the weekend after the France attacks, we made a couple of memes. And you guys actually shared one of them directly to anti-media. And, man, the one you guys shared, it just went through the roof as far as going viral. Our page just started gaining the fan base started growing incredibly. And we woke up the next day, and everything was fine, and all of a sudden we were shut down. And, you know, we were trying to figure out what exactly was going on here. And it turns out that there was a group of people, probably about 300 people, that were coming after us, trying to, you know, they were reporting every single post that we were making. And eventually it just took its toll. And it's kind of incredible that the timing that it happened also, whereas, you know, after what happened in France, and we were actually making a lot of content regarding that issue.
Yeah, and it was hard hitting, man. I remember the meme that we shared was talking, you know, it showed several of the recent tragedies that have happened around the world that basically garnered zero media attention and absolutely no outrage by the world public. And then all of a sudden this attack, and I don't want to downplay it too much, but, you know, 120 people dying in an attack is kind of small beans compared to the shit that really is going on. I mean, the U.S. intervention in Iraq alone is responsible for between 1 and 4 million civilian deaths. 1 in 4 million people dead. And it's like, oh, well, big effing deal. You know, 100 people died in Paris, you know. And again, I don't want to downplay what's going on over there, but people have really this selective outrage about what's going on. And I think that's what your page was really highlighting. And it really hurt a lot of people's feelings, I guess. And, you know, Claire is sitting here next to me, and we're going through today looking at some of the comments that were made on the anti-media author page, on her author page. And literally everyone with the France filter, flag filter on their profile was like, you're a crazy wench and you don't know what the F you're talking about, you stupid B. You know what I'm saying? Like, I don't want to say the words on the radio, but really bad shit, man. And I can imagine, you know, the kind of backlash you guys were getting, and we've been subject to it before. In fact, the meme that you guys made for us, I knew it was very contentious, so I ran it for 24 hours and I pulled it down before we can get too many trolls on us trying to report us as spam, you know. But this is kind of the downfall here of social media, where unpopular opinions, as valid as they may be, can be shut down, you know. And I think that's exactly what you guys experienced.
Yeah, exactly right. I mean, the reasoning behind Facebook shutting down Murica today was that some of our content had been reported as cruel and insensitive. So, I mean, this is the internet, guys. I mean, if you don't like what you see, go somewhere else. Hang out on a different page, you know?
Exactly.
It's pretty ridiculous. And you guys brought up a good point, you know, about most of the backlash we've been experiencing from is mostly from these hardline right-wingers, you know, and they're the same people that say, well, don't judge every single cop by the actions of a few, but yet they take the actions of a few Muslim extremists and they judge the entire religion. And it's just, I mean, it's things like that that we like to highlight and kind of, you know, either satirically make fun of or, you know, just get people to kind of think. And we were actually really amazed today. There's been quite a bit of support from different pages, kind of like the underground anarchist community online and stuff. There's been quite a few people that are upset about it, and they're actually trying to help us get our fan base back, you know, so we can keep on going.
Well, we're on board with you. We love your content. We use it all the time, and you know, maybe it's time to start a website. You know, Claire has been saying that for a while. They're like, man, these guys need a website. You know, and it's really sad to see the censorship. You know, and as you said, a lot of these right winger guys that are totally against political correctness in theory, and except for when it's politically incorrect in their opinion, and it's, oh my God, they can't have that opinion, let's shut down the page. And it's like, oh, okay. So everything you've been saying for the past 6 months about political correctness has just been, you know, as long as it fits your opinion, then it's, you know, not right to be politically correct. So, you know, a bunch of hypocrisy. I mean, this whole situation is rife with hypocrisy. All this, everyone worried about France. I mean, shit. I just read a report that in Baltimore there's been 300 people murdered this year alone. You know, and it's very few people talking about it. We all know about Chicago and the violence out there. Hundreds of people dying on a regular basis out there. I mean, shit, over like holiday weekends, there'll be like 20, 30 people dead in one weekend. You know, and it's like, oh, no one gives a shit, you know. So, you know, there's a lot of hypocrisy going on all around this issue. Go ahead, Manny. What were you saying?
I said, when you said 20 or 30 people a day, it sounds like you're talking about Mexico.
Yeah, I mean, seriously, it really does. It's reminiscent, you know, and it's very, very sad to see that, like, you know, how much of the public opinion is literally manufactured by the media. And that's why I think pages like America Today and the anti-media are so important, because we're able to kind of see through the media narratives and kind of provide a criticism of them. And it seems to resonate with a lot of people. Ryan, I don't know how many shares that one meme had on it that we shared from you, but I know it was a lot, and I know you guys were gaining thousands and thousands of followers by the hour, and you know, it's resonating with a lot of people. In fact, Claire's article that really called this hypocrisy out, as I mentioned at the beginning of the program, was literally the most viral piece of text on the internet in the entire world over the weekend. And so it does resonate with people, but people also have their feelings hurt, and they don't want to be called hypocrites for changing their profile picture to a, you know, France filter and all that kind of thing.
Go ahead, Claire. It's said that people do not like to have their illusions destroyed, and to see the backlash of people being outraged, you know, America Today being shut down. I was actually reported for a comment that was, there was literally nothing offensive about the comment. It was literally just a comment, and my profile was briefly shut down. I mean, people will do anything to prevent their illusions from being destroyed.
Yeah, and you know, Facebook is a very dangerous battleground. It's very reminiscent of the downfalls of democracy, and you know, when the popular opinion is held, and someone may post something that's truthful, but it goes against popular opinion, you know, it can be shut down. I got a notification today that someone was trying to impersonate me. And I was just like, oh, shit. And Facebook sent me the notification three times, like, hey, is this person trying to impersonate you? Click yes or no. And I'm just like, oh, shit. But anyway, man, I want to bring Jake back into this because Jake's got some pretty strong opinions regarding the censorship stuff. And then we'll open back the round table. We only got about 3 minutes left. So Jake, what do you have to say, man?
Well, I'm kind of a hypocrite as well, in that I've been watching tons of mainstream media, bundles and bundles of mainstream media since Friday. I've just been inundating my head with CNN and CNBC and all the mainstream news channels. And what I've noticed, and what's really starting to freak me out, is that the media is pushing for war more than at least what the government narrative is. You know, Obama came out and has been vociferously defending all day his decision to not put boots on the ground in Syria. And if you listen to some of these journalists who are supposed to be somewhat objective in what they're saying, then all of a sudden they're like, well, what are we supposed to do? You know, what about the killers? You know, how do we get rid of them? It's just like, what are you talking about? Why? I mean, the journalists are calling for war. These corporate media journalists are calling for war. And so it's just been really wearing me out. And I guess I need to turn the television off, Nick.
Yeah, we need to take Manny and Menar's advice. Turn off the TV. I'm sure you lost several thousand brain cells from watching CNN. I think CNN's the worst of the bunch because they pretend to be unbiased. At least MSNBC and Fox News, you know, it's left wing and right wing. CNN's like, oh, we're right down the middle, guys. We care. We're independent, but we love war and that kind of thing. But yeah, you're right, man. I saw a bunch of calls for action from you name it. I mean, Reuters, Politico, AP, Fox, you know, all these outlets are like, oh, we need to just go start up a bunch of more wars. Let's never mind any of the details behind why ISIS exists to begin with. Let's not talk about any of that stuff, because we helped create those issues and we're not going to call ourselves hypocrites. You know, and keep in mind, all these news outlets helped sell us the war in Iraq. None of them really questioned anything about the war in Iraq. Like, they got weapons of mass destruction, and God damn it, we're going to go do something about it. And that's just the end of the story. And anyone that's questioned it, you're unpatriotic and you hate America, and that's it. You know, and this is the same exact shit we're seeing right now with France. Americans fucking hate France. Americans don't like French people.
Freedom fries.
We had freedom fries after 9/11. God, what the hell is going on right now? I mean, it's like, yeah. On one hand, it's like, oh, France sucks. As long as the media tells us France sucks, it's like, yeah, France is shitty. We need freedom fries. We don't need French fries. Let's rename that shit. And on the other hand, it's like, oh, my God, we need to be in solidarity with the French people. We need to stand with them because it's going to create a bunch of wars. We got a story coming out tomorrow on the anti-media that was first covered by The Intercept today, but it's very telling. If you look at the stock prices of the military defense contractors, guess what they're doing after the Paris attacks? They're skyrocketing through the roof. So keep an eye on that for the antimedia.org tomorrow. We're going to be covering that. Ryan, thank you for joining us. Hopefully America Today goes back online in a couple days or so. Menar is no longer on the program, but I'm glad she joined us. Manny, thanks again for everything. Peace out, and the stereo.
All right. Good night, Nick. Great. Thanks, guys.